Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Biz Radio U, pushing knowledge further by spotlighting the best in business.
Hello and welcome, everybody. I'm Adam Wozniak, and I'm joined here today with my good friend and co-host, Alex Stoker.
And we got one more.
Ryan Smith here.
Ryan Smith. Yep. All right. One of our student ambassadors. Good deal. How you doing, guys?
Good. How are you doing?
Doing well. All right.
First time on the show, so looking forward to it.
How you feeling?
Feeling good.
You sound good.
Thank you.
All right. So let's get into it, guys. Today, we have a very special guest, a CEO and co-founder of Park Int Cycles, Thad Oviatt. How you doing, Thad?
I'm glad to be here today.
Good deal. To start us off, why don't you tell us a little bit about your business?
Park Int Cycles, we do electronic bicycle racks. And the idea is you have a lot of those bike share things that are out there where you can rent a bike and ride it around. Well, we decided to flip the script on that and go with electronic bike racks that lock your bicycle for you. So these would replace regular bike racks you'd see out in the area. And you just basically ride up to it, push your bicycle up into the rack like you would normally, pull your phone out, tap an app, and the bike rack physically locks up your bicycle for you and keeps it safe by locking the wheel and the frame. So you can go do what you want to do and come back and not have to worry about your bicycle being stolen. And you don't have to carry around one of those heavy bike locks.
Right. And those bike locks, they only lock one portion of the bike, right?
Exactly. And they're not really that safe as they like to advertise, because with the advent of battery-powered angle grinders that you can get at Lowe's or Home Depot, you can cut through any bike lock on the market in under 30 seconds. There's even a YouTube video of the London police showing you how to do it for every single bike lock on the market.
Oh, boy.
So it's really changed the whole landscape for bicycle security. So with our bike racks that we want to put out into the community, it's new safety security things, so then you can ride your bike peacefully around the area, be able to lock it up. And meantime, it actually acts as a revenue stream for that property, because it can do, you know, charge for bicycle parking, like a car parking space, like $2 an hour or something like that.
Okay. Now, where can we find these?
Well, right now, we're actually working out of my garage in Roswell. Mm-hmm. Actually, just say my dad's garage in Roswell. We have one working unit right now, but we're talking around to a bunch of the cities in the North Metro area to get a first system out and deployed so that people would be able to use it and appreciate it and ride into their community.
Okay, yeah. And is it just cities that you're looking at, or where all
we're looking at target? Yeah, I mean, we're looking at cities, we're looking at campuses, so universities, hotels as well, actually rent out bicycles. So first it starts off as bicycle parking, and then it moves to actual people who already have a bicycle fleet to act as a kiosk for them to be able to rent out bicycles. It makes it nice and tidy, they stand up and everything. And then eventually when we can handle the liabilities, change it into an actual bike share, so people can rent out regular bicycles instead of the prefabricated bike share bikes that are out there now that cost about $1,000 a piece,
right?
And still get stolen. These would be like renting out $400 or $500 bikes. So if those get stolen, it's no real hit to the wallet. You can just go ahead and replace them easy. And the racks would just need a slight augmentation to be able to read RFID cards that were, or tags that are put on the bikes themselves. And that way, we could just augment all the racks so that the racks can tell whether you're parking your bike or you're parking a bike share bike.
Oh, okay. Wow. So it's just seamless.
Yeah. Total seamless integration.
Oh, wow. That's great. You know, the first thing I thought of was like, say if you had it, you know, like a business started having it in front like that, would just promote their employees and anyone that works in the building to ride their bike to work.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, to, like, completely.
Buy a bike and then ride the bike to
work. Yeah, I mean, most people, even the guys who ride bike shares, their report came out that like 60% of the population actually rides bike share bikes or rents those out, have their own bicycle. So they'd love to be able to ride their own bike. It's just everyone has that fear of their bicycle being stolen, and rightly so.
Right.
So for like a business or something, it'd be like they could promote the fact that they now have a secure place for people to be able to ride up their bike to work. And they can also track when people are riding their bike to work, so they can actually give them discounts for multimodal transportation.
Yeah. Atlanta could use a little less cars on the road, especially right now.
What?
Yeah. I mean,
it's not like there's anything going on downtown.
Yeah.
No major blockages or anything. But yeah, that's a great idea, especially someone like me who's kind of paranoid, especially when I do take my bike out, you know, whenever I'm riding around and I have to park my bike. Part of me makes peace with the fact that I may never see my bike again. I have a friend that actually got his bike stolen on campus. So that's definitely a great idea for you to be targeting campuses for sure. So, you know, what made you want to start this project? Did you have a personal...
Actually, yeah, I had a personal thing. My friend had two bikes stolen in a week in college.
Wow, that's a record.
Yeah, they were racing bikes. And the second time it was stolen, they actually left a sticky note attached to the cut bike lock chain on the ground with us. Was it had a smiley face and thanks written on it?
Oh my gosh. Jeez. Wow.
Yeah. And this was starting my second undergrad degree at Georgia Southern after ending at Georgia Tech. And so I was like, you know, that totally sucks. What can I do? How can I help? Because he's my friend. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to see if I can get a better bike lock. I mean, it's like a better mouse trap, but hey, you know, at the time I didn't like what the professors were doing. So I was like, you know, let's give it a shot. And it just kind of grew into this thing that, when I started my master's at Georgia Southern, I actually asked, you know, can I just go ahead and keep working on this bike lock rack thing? And they were like, sure, okay, yeah, whatever, as long as it's got some kind of electronical component to it. So, yeah, by the end time of after my first master's, I actually had the ugliest looking proof of concept I think I've ever seen in my life of tack welded together sheet metal. I mean, this stuff would cut your clothing if you held it too close to you.
Oh boy.
Yeah, it was rough, but it did lock up 90% of the bikes that are on the market today. I was able to get the right parameters down. So when I left college, you know, I went to work for a little bit.
Yeah.
As most people do, you know, and then got downsized. So I got laid off. So I was like, okay. And picked it back up and joined the ATDC downtown, the Advanced Technology Development Center. And found connections to like Georgia Tech Capstone Design Program, the Georgia Manufacturing Extension Partnership, which is government subsidized commercial product design. Found a local manufacturer out in Conyers, Georgia, that would be able to work for like a discounted price on to build out my prototype. And through all that development, and I think we include something like 15 extra engineers through the whole process, I was able to get this prototype made into a commercial demo unit that I took around last year to the public to see, you know, you got to see, will people still use this?
Right.
After we've worked on it so much, will they like it? You know,
yeah.
Did everything hold up? And they loved it. And in fact, the one question I kept getting asked is, you know, great, this is wonderful. Where is it? You know, where is it deployed? So I can just like use it. And
oh, that's a great problem to have.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, we had like over 700 people tried out. And the main question was, where is it?
Where?
I want to use it. Where is it now?
So you mentioned a little bit about the sheet metal and how you started with like the real rough, like literally rough edges.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit more about the evolution of your prototype?
Yeah. Okay. So I actually was the one thing I was trying to figure out is like, I got to show research as to what I'm doing. So how do I do that? So I actually researched the entire bicycle market and found out that there is no single standardized bicycle frame. It's completely custom. It's like an inch here, a centimeter there, you know, just off on everything.
It's real technical.
Yeah. It's actually not. It's geometry.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
It is high school level geometry. The kicker is the orientation of it. Mm-hmm. And there's just such a variety of bicycle frames out there. But through that research, I found the one point of commonality all bicycle frames share. And I was able to build the initial prototype based off of that point, which is kind of the secret sauce of the whole business. So I'm not going to give it away here. But the kicker was like, at Georgia Southern, where I was at doing my master's, there was a scrap metal yard, there was an IT building, there was a machine shop, there was an engineering building, like all in the same place. So I literally like disassembled metal shelves, screwed them together with wood and put a track motor in the thing with metal bars and kind of got it working with a proto board type of scenario thing. And I think the first actual prototype we had shorted out on demo day.
Ooh.
Oh yeah, we went to go press the button, the whole thing just shorted out, and we're like, okay, here's what it's supposed to do. And we could show video of it actually working, so we got credit. And then I scrapped all of that, went back to the drawing board, made a smaller, sleeker design for it. It still was just raw material. I think we had an industrial hand washing thing as a counterweight. It's kind of an industrial dip well container that you would wash your hands with.
Like in like a mechanic shop?
Yeah, like a mechanic shop. Okay, yeah. We had actually welded part of that onto it as like a bucket for counterweights onto this whole thing. So people were like, what's dip well? And I'm like, I don't know. It's some piece of scrap we got out of the yard. We welded it on there. And, but then after, you know, getting out and then going to like the capstone design program, we actually had the entire senior class sign up to work on our project, which
That's
we were,
great.
Yeah, I mean, we were four by hands, that. Yeah, and so they whittled it down to like two groups of five, and they're like, okay, we got one group, and we've got the other group, and I'm like, this is great. I can do like A/B prototyping and testing all at the same time. This is awesome. So I was like, okay, you get specs and you get specs in the history of the stuff I've worked on it. And we'll see how it goes. So they had a one semester and they built it all out and they're like, cool. Okay. All right. So we literally took both the designs, went to the commercial product design guy and said, okay, which one will actually work in the real world? And it turns out the one that was easier to build wouldn't work out too well, but the one that was harder to build was actually more intuitive.
Okay.
And made more sense to be able to work with. So we're like, okay, we'll go with that one. And then we got it all built out. So we actually had, at that point, we had full steel design, full steel spring loaded integration. And then the electronic system was, you ever heard of like a Raspberry Pi? Stuff they use in school and everything.
Yeah, it's like a miniature computer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Little proto board, miniature computer thing. And we found out about that. That's when we moved from working it via kiosk to working it via your phone. Wow. Because, you know, you can use everything with your phone nowadays. Yeah. You know, why not? So that's where we're able to change it over to that. And then we found out, we need card readers too. That'd be good to have because there's a lot of card reading stuff going on in Atlanta, aka MARTA.
There you go.
And stuff. So it'd be nice to maybe integrate into that at some point in the future.
Oh, yeah, that would be the dream one. Just like one card for
one card. Yeah, one card for everything type deal, or use a phone near field and there's stuff, whatever technique you can get.
At the very least, it's a backup plan.
Exactly.
I mean, phone battery's down.
Yeah. So we developed it all out, and then it was the we got the steel. We call it the Green Monster. I mean, because this is 200 pounds of steel. I lift it up to move it around. So it's kind of a workout tool at that point in time. But it's not, I mean, it's one of those where I've literally seen kids use it as a jungle gym.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
And so sturdy.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Very sturdy, especially when it's anchored down to the ground, very sturdy. And I've also seen my 90-year-old grandmother park a bike in it. So it's compatible for everybody. And the kicker was like, we were filming for, ABC Shark Tank. We were filming an application video for it. We haven't gotten the call yet, but we're still waiting.
I believe.
Yeah, I believe on that one. But this little kid at the park just sits there and walks up and parks his bike in the rack.
Huh.
With no instruction. Like, we were on break getting a water because it was like 100 degrees outside. This kid just comes up, parks his bike, and mom walks over like, honey, what are you doing? I'm parking my bike, mom. Like, no, really, what are you doing? I'm parking my bike. See, just got a bike here. I'm parking my bike. And that's the mother was just like, what is he? And we're like, can we video him using that? And they're like, no. Like, oh, okay, all right, you know.
Yeah, the rejection aside, that's a good sign.
Yeah.
I mean, that's about as good as it gets.
Yeah, no instruction. It's intuitive to kids to be able to use. And with all the new development, I mean, it's basically a tech platform. And I said, I was at a smart city meeting last night. Actually,
Can you tell us a little bit about smart cities?
Yeah, smart city is the idea that we take a regular city that's out there and just chock it full of sensors and everything else, so we know what's going on in the city, like street sensors for live traffic readings, checking out how many people are walking down the sidewalk, to the point of like air quality or what's the water flow through the pipes and everything, being able to check and read all this kind of stuff, so that they can take that information, because smart city is really taking the information from all those sensors and doing something with it. Because there's a lot of things out there where they have the technology and they just put it out there and it's great, but it doesn't really,
right.
It's something spectacular thing to look at. But it's when they start actually taking that data and changing it over to changing the landscape of the city and everything, that really is when a smart city comes around. And there really is no smart city out there right now. I mean, we have sections of smart city. I think North Avenue, the mayor downtown is like dedicated North Avenue to be a smart city laboratory corridor type thing. And there's Buckhead, there's some areas there, and there's spots around town, not around town, but around the U.S. as well, that are smart city-esque in certain areas. But it's really something that's just now emerging with the whole internet of things, connected devices and everything like that. It's really just now happening. And Yeah, it's like, and I mean, even investors are just, I got told last night, are just starting to look at smart cities as a good investment, as a long-term investment.
Right.
Because the idea is you want to really just want to build something that's going to create that data and then be able to partner with somebody that can do something with that data.
Your product would just slide right in seamlessly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. Put it outside of a building. People can park their bicycles. You can do push ads to the actual phone once they lock. Plus, you can tell when, because those devices actually communicate cellularly to the cloud. So that, you know, you can tell when that profile of that person is parked in multiple locations. And with all the bike racks around, it creates a network web to be able to tell, okay, if they've parked here, here, and here, and there's a street that kind of goes right down where those bike racks are and it takes a left and they showed up over in the cross area, it's obvious they've gone down the street and taken a left. Instead of going through a building. So, you know, you can start actually doing more bike lanes for people. You can start changing the landscape for how the people actually move around it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Make the city responsive. I don't know about responsible. I don't know.
And you had mentioned earlier that, you know, the ideal would be to partner with someone that works with data and knows what they're doing. So what would that process be like, finding the right person to work with?
Yeah, for us, that would be a situation of starting off finding like somebody who's into parking apps type situation.
Okay.
If they already do it for cars and stuff, then they're already into those areas. So this would be kind of an add-on service for them to say like, okay, you know, you have your car parking, now you have your bike parking, you know, type of stuff. Even on a campus, I've seen times, I spent 10 years on Georgia Southern campus, earning multiple degrees now. Yeah, so I wasn't just partying and drinking the whole time, but I saw things where they expand the campus and they would just leave the whole place grass.
Yeah.
And then they just walk and just wait to see where the walk paths would happen. And then they would go out and rebrick the walk paths out so that people would have like a nice place to walk instead of just walking on dirt the whole time. And that's kind of what we'd be doing for a city or a campus as well, is that we would basically be that grass area that would be turning into that walk path.
Yeah.
That nice dirt walk path, so that the city would be able to come around with the data of, okay, this is where people have been walking or traveling, and be able to put in something like the brick for the walk path. Well, you'd be able to put in bike lanes for that area, or you'd be able to put in more, yeah, advertise from more livable walkable areas. Livable, what am I looking for? Words here. The lifestyle area where it's like more shopping, more, you know.
Like the Beltline.
Like a Beltline type of thing. Yeah. Where you have like, you can now go shop and ride your bike around the area and you don't have to drive your car up and around a corner, park, well, find a parking spot, pay for a parking spot. Where that's, you know, okay. And then you have to go drive around to the next place and drive around to the next place. And now it's just like, okay, well, I could just ride my bike between all those and not have to actually spend the gas money.
It's true.
So you're basically, right now your model is just with bicycles, but have you thought about reaching out for other products such as like longboards, motorcycles, or Segways?
Right now we're focusing on bicycles, yeah. Longboards, Segways, and all that kind of stuff, it just depends on the wheels on them. We could see that using the, right now it has a base area that locks up wheels.
Yeah.
That could eventually go out to locking those different types of modal transportations up. It's just that right now we're really heavily focused on the bicycle market, mainly because we found out like the bike rack industry is like an $8 billion industry in the United States.
Wow.
Yeah, it's growing at like 10% per year because of all the new mixed use developments that are going in.
Yeah.
So we're like, okay, well, we can start off there. And we have a competitor in San Francisco that came in from Estonia, of all places, the country. Yeah. Of Estonia, from all places. So it's like, okay, there's two in the market. And then the international market starts at $100 billion and goes up just because of all the different... outside of the United States, a lot more people ride bicycles.
So yeah.
It's just one of those. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those, we have toyed around with the idea of like scooters, being because most of the scooters locked up anyways.
Right.
So having like the wheel station lock or something like that.
That's closer than the longboard or the Segway the big motorcycle. You know,
I always saw longboards as one of those ones where it's like you could take that in the class with you. No one's really going to bother you about that.
And that's kind of like just like a campus thing.
Yeah. And we're looking at like urban people who want to like ride their bike to work, just, or you know, really just getting around town, especially mm-hmm. with the whole 85 thing that was going on downtown. I was literally listening at people yell at people on bicycles when you could tell they were just kind of jealous that the person on the bicycle was passing the entire traffic while it took them an hour to move like 1 mile.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, right now is definitely a great time to be using your bike to get to wherever you need to go.
Yeah, I was probably one, as my friends told me, you were like one of the few people that I was somewhat like happy that the whole 85 thing happened. I was like, yeah, I mean, it kind of relates to the joke around town of, hey, let's go downtown. You know, now it's, but at the same time, when that collapsed, I was like, okay, so there's a lot of people in town now that are going to have to figure out how to get around, and biking along with the, I mean, Atlanta Bicycle Coalition has done a wonderful job in helping to get more bikes on the bike lanes on the road. And then the Relay Bike Share has done a wonderful job as well to show more people cycling around downtown Atlanta. But also, there's also bike shares up in the, you know, the North Metro area in Smyrna, Kennesaw, Alpharetta, and there's one other one. But, yeah, those type areas
it's
as well.
It's out there.
Yeah, it's out there. And for those, I mean, for those areas, it's more that they have a lot of in-town living that has cropped up. Then there's been a lot of initiatives to help to redevelop these northern towns, northern cities. And so they have a lot of in-town living, but then they don't have all the car space available, so they want more people to cycle in. And that's one of the areas we like to help out is, I mean, the bike shares are wonderful where people can rent and ride around, but wouldn't you like to ride your own bike in the area? So it's a lot more comfortable and stuff. So we're looking to talk to these other cities around North Metro and just around Georgia, period, that have a lot of in-town living and just really want to have some place for people to be able to ride their bike and safely park and enjoy the, you know, the walking around and shopping and all that kind of stuff, and then ride their bike back out instead of having to waste the gas money.
Oh, yeah. I know. I live in Marietta, right near the Big Chicken. So, like, if I need to run to the store and it's between, like, 3:30 and 6:30, you know, it's going to take me way longer than normal. If I had a, you know, if I had, like, a bike option, like Bike Lane, anything like that.
Yeah.
Just one or two more little extra incentives there. Like, I would be able to just ride. It's like 2 miles, maybe 2.5 miles to a Kroger.
That's not a bad ride.
Way less the Harry's.
Yeah.
There's a Publix a few miles the other direction.
Yeah, that's not a bad ride.
That's how I think I would do it. Just to run errands and then for fun, you know, because I could probably make it to, some of my roommate rides and he goes to Kennesaw Mountain.
Cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, he makes the haul up there.
That's a haul, definitely.
Yeah. And he loves it too.
Oh yeah. And there's a lot of tech out there now to turn your bike into a full, you know, listen to radio, you know, full lights, stream stuff, you know, all that kind of jazz. There's tons of tech out there now. It's just the security aspect of it has just really been trying to do a rat race with, oh, it's tougher steel or it's titanium or
that'll be great for the person taking my bike.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, so let's put infrastructure out there now that actually secures people's bicycles, but also generates revenue, gets the community more inclusive to what's happening in the area. You know, just get that security factor that's just not there.
Right.
And they figure that, was it every 30 seconds a bike is stolen in the United States?
Jeez. Wow. I did not know that.
No kidding. Yeah. Every 30 seconds a bike is stolen in the United States.
Jeez.
And I mean, that's averaging $1,000 a bike pretty much. So, I mean,
that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what do? You get your bike stolen. You're like, crap, what do? I go buy another bike.
Yeah.
And then I go buy a bigger lock.
Yeah.
And I know there's a lot of cyclists out there that count ounces on bicycles, and then they have to carry a 5-pound bike lock.
Mm.
So
maybe, you know, they're not always carrying like a full book bag. Like, where do they hold that? You know,
I know, right? Yeah. It's crazy. And the size of these things are just huge.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, great, wonderful, but still doesn't match up against an angle grinder.
Yeah. Right.
And I could literally get you to help me steal a bike. It's simple. They just sit there and go, oh, I lost my key. I lost my this. I lost my that. You know, I got this thing to cut it because that's going to get a property or whatever is going to come and take it and cut it and all that kind of jazz. And you help me and I take off of the bike and go to Craigslist and sell it. And, you know,
I mean, it's
ridiculous.
Yeah, it shouldn't be that easy.
It shouldn't be that. It really should not be that easy. But thankfully it is, so I can go ahead and put my product out there and actually lock up your bike with steel bars through the wheel and the frame.
Yeah.
Wow. So.
And you had mentioned earlier that the biking industry is growing, and it's especially big in Europe. I know over the summer I was doing a study abroad in Germany, and everyone was riding their bikes everywhere. I eventually got a bike I was renting to pretty much go wherever I needed to go. Do you have any plans to eventually bring this product overseas? Because I could see it definitely being really popular there.
Oh, yeah. We're actually salivating about being able to take it overseas.
Yeah.
There are whole parking structures that are the size of the any parking garage in like Amsterdam that they've actually already been doing a somewhat of a form of electronic bike parking.
Okay.
Over in like Copenhagen and Amsterdam for years now. But it's only been, you know, what spots open or what spots free. There hasn't been that security aspect to it.
Right.
We'd love to be able to do that. We just, right now, we're only patented in the United States.
Right.
So we'd love to do licensing overseas and stuff. It's just the capital to be able to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Right now. And so we're hunting capital any way, shape, and form we can to move out of the garage.
Okay.
I mean, my dad wants his garage back, so.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, so definitely take it slow starting off.
Yeah, I'd say that for anybody, just go, whatever you're doing, take it slow starting off and really do the research, you know, really look around and talk to people to find out what's the next step and then do it. I mean, somebody asked me, it's like, how do you get your foot in the door for finding out all these opportunities? It's like you put your foot in the door. You physically, you just like shove it in there. You
know? Yeah.
Now, I was looking on your website and I saw a interesting hashtag, the hug your bike. What's that about?
That's one night of a little few too many drinks. We were trying to describe how our bike rack physically locks up a bike. And I just put two arms out and kind of put I'm physically putting my arms out right now. And flapping my hands back and forth. It kind of looked like hugging and I just blurted out. It was like, well, it hugs your bike. And I got yelled at right then to write it down because I wouldn't remember it by the time I woke up. And then we just started rolling with it. And people were like, how's your bike rack lock up my bike? It hugs your bike and keeps it safe. And they're like, oh, okay. It was the phrase that made the most sense of what it actually does.
That's great. So definitely there was a rise of the bike industry, and I assume same with security. Do you see your product as being a disruptive technology for, I don't know, potentially like or different locking companies right now or locking products?
Yeah, we're extremely disruptive. We were actually one of the disruptive companies that was debuted at TechCrunch in 2015.
Oh, wow.
It's really because the entire industry is stuck in the horse and hitch days. Mm-hmm. It has not changed.
That's like, yeah, it literally a horse and hitch.
Literally, yeah, yeah. Literally. Like I've done
just a hitch. Yeah,
previews. I've done pitches where I have a picture of a bike locked up to a rack and the horse hitched up next to it. Because I mean, bike racks don't lock up bicycles,
right?
Bike locks. You have to have a bike rack and a bike lock. Bike locks can be broken, so it's like, okay, let's evolve past this. Let's move past this in a way that, you know, this new electronic bike rack locks the bike, you know, instead of the horse and hitch where your horse is only there. And it's only bike locks and bike racks only keep the honest.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all they're there for now. Mm-hmm. I mean, anybody who really wants to steal them, they're going to steal them.
Right.
And I mean, with our rack, it's steel design and everything, 200 pounds, but you know, someone went to town on it, but it would still take them like an hour or something like that to cut through something to be able to get the bike out. On our demos, we'd have people like try to yank the bike out of the rack, and to the point where we had to stop them because they were starting to deform our demo bike. We're like, we still need that demo bike. So please stop like bending it.
Right.
And we'd have to go bend it back into shape and everything.
So, I mean, if it's simple and it's easy to do, people are going to do it, and you'll just cut that down.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's people are going to go with the simple, easy choice every time. So, and to have a structure that looks intimidating, to be like, okay, this bicycle is now locked in here.
Right.
As opposed to, yeah, we locked it up in the tree outside. So it should still be there when we get back. I'm pretty sure. Yeah. Yeah. Or did you check? The other tree, the one next to the bigger one.
Right. So You've been doing this for 4 years, right?
I've been doing this as a business for 4 years. As a project, I've been doing it for 8 or 9 years.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So during that whole long process, have you had any, like, what would be like one major like issue or setback that you had?
Well, was to, when finding out that people want to go ahead and use their cell phones instead of using a kiosk, that was a major setback because we didn't know what we could use to go ahead and...
But when was that?
That was, I think, 2014. Mm-hmm. But before that was even, how do I pay for all this?
Right.
I mean, I'm literally, I had just been laid off of a corporate job. Mm-hmm. And was I thankfully paid off my credit card, so I was happy for that. But I didn't have any money for anything, and so thankfully I had friends and family that invested a good $50,000. So I was able to start figuring out what to do, and that was the real catch point. And then what the other thing was, who would want to be able to work on it with me? I don't even know, because I'm a computer engineer, I'm an electrical engineer, I'm an IT programmer. I am not a guy who works with metal.
Yeah.
So I did not actually build any of this stuff myself as far as physically doing it. Mm-hmm. I had a manufacturer in Conyers put that together. Right. But, you know, trying to find out people, mechanical and industrial engineering, how would they be able to work through this and everything? And then I got a connection to the Georgia Tech Capstone. And then afterwards, it was like, great. How do I commercialize this? I have no idea how to do that. You know, so I was able to find another connection for the Georgia MEP to have them,
the Georgia what now?
Georgia Manufacturing Extension Partnership Program.
Okay. Okay.
Third floor of this energy building. What they do is they match you up with a commercial product designer who does your work for on government subsidized pay.
Okay.
So it's far less than it would be to just go out and do it yourself.
Right.
Well, finding this person, I was like, he's like, oh, this is great. I used to work on tractors and treadmills and all that kind of stuff. So this is right in my wheelhouse. And I'm like,
cool.
Oh, thank God. Because I don't have a clue what I'm doing here. So he went ahead and built out everything. And then it's, oh, great. How do I manufacture this? I have no clue how to do that either. And I found another group that was a startup that had a manufactured product. And when I happened to call up the manufacturer that was there, they happened to be there the day. So they're like, yeah, we know that. Yeah, he's pretty cool.
Cool.
We sit down, have a talk with him. So we're actually still working with him today, thankfully. But yeah, every step of the way has been, I have no clue what I'm doing. So how do I do that? I mean, even the original proof of concept was, how do I build this? How do I find material? Mm-hmm. And my sister at the time, who was a graphic designer, and she was going to Georgia Southern with me at the time. She goes, yeah, the art department's got a scrapyard. I'm like, what? Scrapyard? Like, if you go and ask real nice, I'm pretty sure they'll let you rummage through it. I'm like, that would be awesome, because then I don't have to pay for metal. So yeah, that's when the Dipwell container came out and everything, to all of that. And then I literally sat in the art building for 4 hours waiting for somebody to get free to weld my initial concept together. Mm-hmm. To the point where the guy's like, what are you doing? You've been standing here for 4 hours. I'm like, waiting for somebody to get free. You know, I asked a couple times, but you guys are busy doing your last critique stuff, which evidently takes hours. And by then I'd already put everything part by numbers. So right. He's thinking he's going to work with me for another 6 hours. I'm like, no, just, you know, this Legos, this goes here, that goes there, that goes there. Yeah. I just need you to put it all together. And then actually the funny thing was, right after that, we ended up going up to Kennesaw in 2011. For the Georgia Bowl competition that is held there some years. And we placed third against Johns Hopkins and MIT.
All right, could you tell us a little more about the competition itself?
Yeah, it's a collegiate competition involving MBA graduate students.
Mm-hmm.
And it involved, I don't know if it's like the ACC or what, or if it's just, you know, the Southeast or just college in general. They, for some reason, each group did have a Georgia Tech MBA student on it. Don't know why, but it was one of those where all these different, it spanned a whole different range of projects. I mean, MIT was doing, MIT was doing MRI research for football injuries, which turned out to be a rather huge thing.
Yeah.
Johns Hopkins was doing stem cell research recovery.
Wow.
From afterbirth stuff.
Okay, that's a pretty good company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jeez. So I was just like, and place third on that, I'm good. I have a bike rack. So, yeah. You know, I'm like, we are good. I'm fine with coming in third. But yeah, no, that was like just the early indications that this is actually a thing that can do stuff aside from just helping my friend not have his bicycle stolen.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it obviously seems like you've come a very long way, especially with your product. What advice could you give to young entrepreneurs? You know, I mean, we have a lot going to KSU with the Entrepreneurship Center. So what advice can you give to them going through the same struggles?
Basically, when you're trying to figure out a project to do, don't go with the project that everybody's like, yeah, that sounds great, wonderful. Just kind of, you know, don't do that project. Do the project that somebody's like, yeah, that makes sense. You know, that might actually work. Because it's going to leave you open to be like, okay, I'm actually going to have to do some work here to figure this out. This isn't like somebody's already done it first, which Googling a project actually does work. You know, just quick Google search, check if anybody's done it. You would be surprised some of the stuff you found. I mean, one was, the other options I had to work with was something like a maglev catapult that I was going to do, or a box that follows you around based on where your phone is.
Wow.
Turns out somebody made that.
Wow.
That's actually crazy. Yeah, there's like a whole box that follows you around in the airport thing now.
Huh.
So I really missed out on that. I should have done that instead. but yeah, no, just find something you like. Find something you that makes sense to you. If it's having a personal component to it makes a big difference because it means you actually care about it.
Definitely.
Yeah. But at the same point in time, you want to be able to step back from it and figure out, you know, people make stuff all the time all the time of, you know, I developed this app. I made this product. I did it. And what it really comes down to is timing. You could make the best thing in the world. If it's the wrong time, no one's going to buy it.
Yeah.
That's why I'm so happy about the I-85 thing. people bike more. But at the same point in time, YouTube, great example. Group came out 2 years before YouTube came out with the same thing, like verbatim. And it just never launched.
Mm-hmm.
And then the whole Facebook thing came out. People started talking around and everything, starting interacting. Then YouTube came out and it was like, oh, great. You know, this works. We can share videos now as much as we're sharing all that for me. And it just worked.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of it comes down to timing and just getting that right.
Well, then we thank you so much for coming on. Hope you had a good time. If there's anywhere, our viewers can reach you, website.
Yeah. Parkentcycles.com, parkentcycles.com. Cause we ensure trust that your bicycle will be there when you get back. Little nanogram stuff we put together here. We're on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Google+. We're probably on a sign somewhere. May 2nd, we'll be at Tech Square Labs live demoing the bike rack as part of the, what is it called? The Greater Atlanta Internet of Things Showcase.
Okay. Tech Square Labs.
Tech Square Labs, May 2nd. It's free.
Okay.
Yeah. It's totally free. Just you can go look it on Eventbrite. Free to register and come down, take a look. It's from 6 to 8, I think. But the great part is it's right down by the Midtown MARTA stop. And the tech trolley goes right by there. So it's really easy to get to. But yeah, we'll be demoing our electronic bicycle rack for anybody to come and take a look at.
All right. That's good awesome. Deal. Well, I'm Adam Wozniak.
Alex Stoker.
And I'm Ryan Smith.
All right. And this is BizRadio, pushing knowledge further by spotlighting the best in business.